Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest and You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Should girls and boys play on the same sports teams? Many experts say up until age 11 or 12, it's not a bad idea and can even benefit kids, exposing them to different styles of play and teamwork. But once puberty hits, local policies on co-ed sports vary depending on the demands of the game, what the kids want, community size, and resources. For example, in some small school districts, there might not be enough athletes to field two single same-sex basketball teams, so going co-ed might be the only choice. In another town, girls' ice hockey might not be available, so the boys' league might invite girls to play. Today in The Exchange, what's the status of co-ed sports? When does it work well? When doesn't it? And what does the law say? Let's get your thoughts and especially your experiences in our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests for the hour with me in studio, Ryan Carmichael, Assistant Professor of Exercise and Sport Physiology at Plymouth State University. And Ryan, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Matt Farisi. He's the wrestling coach at Keene High School. And Matt, thank you for making the trip. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And also with us, Alyssa Krause. She's women's softball head coach and women's soccer assistant coach at Dean College in Franklin, Mass. Alyssa's also a former athlete on a boys' varsity soccer team at Winnesquam Regional High School in Tilton. And Alyssa, it's nice to meet you too. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Well, I want to start with you, Ryan, but everybody jump in. What's most important to keep in mind when we talk about co-ed sports versus single-sex sports? And Ryan, just this whole idea of equal opportunity in athletics.
Equal opportunity, meaning like, you know, Title IX. Gosh, I think these guys could answer that question a little bit better. But I think post-puberty, I think it's important to consider the differences in strength and aerobic capacity between males and females. You mentioned, up until age, I don't know what you said, 11 or 12. It's common for girls and boys to be on the same team. But things do change after that. And I think the differences on average that you'll see between males and females in strength and aerobic capacity are going to affect sport performance or can affect sport performance. So I think those are important to consider.
So it's important to keep those physical differences in mind once children get to that age where their bodies really start to change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it depends on the sport, though. There's some sports where those might not be a factor, and there's some sports where they're a huge factor. So you can't really say that, we should do this at the high school level across all sports. You really have to look at, lacrosse versus basketball versus golf. Well, that's an individual sport, but yeah, so very different.
Well, and it's interesting, just doing a bunch of reading in preparing for this show, Ryan. Most people say what you said, that, once you get to puberty, you really need to think about the differences, the real physical differences. And then there are so many, but it depends. But it depends on the sport. And then there are, girls who, there was the girl who was the amazing pitcher in Little League. And there are 1,500 girls, I think I came across a statistic, that are playing on their high school football team. So it seems like there are so many exceptions to this general rule. And I wonder if that's kind of tough for schools and communities to sort out.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think the problem with sports, different sports, is that there's skill involved. So, once you start talking about skill, that's not a physiological, there's no physiological difference between males and females. That's a little bit easier to piece out. So, for instance, I study a lot of endurance sports, and that's so much easier to answer because there's less skill involved in distance running versus soccer and basketball. So you can just look at the physiological differences and see, you know, whether or not you have a level playing field. Also, we're talking about averages when we talk about differences in strength and aerobic capacity. So on average, males might have a higher level of strength than females, but there's individual differences. So, you know, you really... I would think, and these folks would be able to answer a little bit better, you would want to be looking at the actual individual athlete versus just saying, yes, we're going to open that up as a team in our schools.
Well, and you mentioned soccer, and Alyssa, I did want to ask you about your experience as an athlete in high school and younger years. From what I understand, you grew up playing on boys' soccer teams. How come, and what was that like?
So in my high school, we didn't have a girls' program just because there wasn't enough interest. So growing up, it was just kind of a normal for us, and I didn't really see a difference. I was just kind of one of the guys throughout that, and I definitely focused on different skills, just having to play against the guys. I really had to focus on being physical and kind of my endurance and being able to keep up with them. So, I mean, I do think that my foot skills during soccer took a little bit of a hit during that because I was focusing on other stuff.
Other stuff meaning just like keeping up, running up and down the field?
Being physical, you know, bodying people off the ball, like holding my own. And I didn't actually play in I played club soccer growing up too, and that was a girls' program. It was actually in Concord. And I felt that I was more physical than a lot of people that I was playing with, which kind of was my advantage because then I could body other people off the ball. And when I got to college, I was very physical, and other teams didn't really like that, but that was kind of my unique quality is I was very aggressive and, you know, it kind of made me fearless.
So when you got to college, you played women's soccer.
Correct.
But you had played high school soccer with the boys, so that changed your style of play.
It did. When I remember going into my freshman year of college, I was really nervous. Like, you know, all the conditioning that I did for high school soccer, I was like, this is college. Like, it's going to be 1,000 times harder. And I got there and I was running circles around everybody else just because, like, my work ethic was so much better just because what I had to do to compete with the guys.
What's the takeaway for you from that experience, Alyssa, just in terms of, you know, girls and boys playing together?
It was challenging. Definitely. You know, all my friends, like, playing field hockey, playing volleyball, like, I didn't have too many girls on the soccer team. I had, like, one or two that were kind of with me, but it was, honestly, I think it's kind of unique. You know, now I tell people, and they're like, what, you played on a boys' soccer team? And I, you know, I loved it.
When your team competed against other teams that were all boys, was there any sort of, hey, we don't want to compete against you, you have a girl on your team?
Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, kind of rude comments and kind of whatever that kind of put me down. But at the same time, you know, when I pushed them down, it was like, well, you just got pushed down by a girl. So how do you feel now?
How many other girls were there on the team?
On my team?
Yeah. Or were you the only one?
Varsity, I think there was two. And JV, I think we had like four.
And when you were competing against other teams, again, in your area, again, you were at Winnesquam Regional High School in Tilton, were there other teams that had, you know, a couple girls, or were most of the other boys' soccer teams all boys?
I think the only other team that we played that had girls on it was Franklin High School.
Yeah. Again, another small school district. So if you don't bring in girls, you don't have enough people for the team, but not enough girls to field a whole girls soccer team.
Right.
Real interesting, and I'm sure more pieces of your story are going to come up as we talk this hour, Alyssa. But Matt, I wanted to bring you in as well. Again, you're the wrestling coach at Keene High School. How do these issues get brought up in Keene, Matt, and around what sports especially? The issue of co-ed versus single-sex sports.
So I think wrestling in general, specifically, is at an interesting point because right now it is the fastest growing high school sport.
Really?
Yeah, so there were 112 girls wrestling in 1990, and last year they reported over 14,000. And so the interest has really grown. And part of that is it's been an Olympic sport since 2004. There are now about 45 collegiate programs. So this has become something that you can do that has a, you know, if you wanted to pursue this after high school, the opportunity is there. I think there's a certain feedback loop that has to take place to grow popularity in these sports. One is it has to be viewed as like legitimate and a real option that has. You can do something with this if you decide this is what you want to do, and so I think that's starting to drive that interest, in high schools and at lower levels, where girls now see this as, as a real option. The challenge is that it's a slightly different set of rules than boys wrestling. There are six states that have sanctioned state tournaments. The smaller states, typically like New Hampshire, are not included in that. And so to really get the competition, the higher level competition, it does require a lot of travel after the season.
Because you have to go to places where there are girls' teams? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you have to seek out the more talented competition who's traveling to these larger events. I think you're at a point where you need people who went through these collegiate programs now to come back to be coaches, to be to be referees, to sell this idea, and to bring people on board.
You're telling me something that I didn't realize, Matt. So just repeat those numbers again, the numbers of girls wrestling, because I didn't realize it was even that big.
Yeah, and they according to USA Wrestling, that number is probably underreported.
So what is it again?
It's over 14,000 currently.
Girls wrestling.
Yeah.
Do you have girls wrestling at Keene High School?
Yes.
And are they on a separate team, or do they compete with the boys?
They compete with the boys. So really you're trying to run two parallel seasons at once, and the girls wrestle freestyle, and so it's you're kind of coaching in a different way.
Do you coach both teams, Matt? Yeah.
Yes. But because New Hampshire doesn't have a girls wrestling set of programs, they wrestle on the boys' team. And so most of the girls' events are held after the boys' season. And so part of it is you try to not extend the season from November to July. And it's a matter of kind of making this boys' season more of a preseason, where we're not going to get injured, we're not going to get worn down by the time we really want to perform at a high level at big competitions later on.
And do boys and girls wrestle each other, or are they competing just girl versus girl?
No, they wrestle each other.
Wow. It seems like teenage boys would be, in general, so much stronger than a girl. It doesn't seem like a fair fight.
Yeah, that's typically the case. And especially as you get to kind of the higher levels, where those differences really are exacerbated, and we had one girl who's technically very talented, but just in matches, you just was outmatched.
Right, sure. So there's certain sports where size and weight really matter, and other sports like soccer where there's a lot of skill involved. Although Alyssa told us about the endurance and how she really had to keep up in terms of her aerobic capacity and so forth. What do you think about these stories, Ryan, that we're hearing from Alyssa, her experience in soccer, and Matt with his experience in wrestling? It's really interesting.
Yeah, I think that the wrestling one is very interesting to me because, we see if you're looking at average population, not athletes, males will be 40 to 60% stronger in the upper body, and 25 to 30% stronger in the lower body. Again, that's not athletes. But the reason for those differences really has to do with body composition and body size. So wrestling is a sport where you're wrestling and you're competing in your weight class. So to some extent, you're accounting for that. So if you account for body size, the differences in strength go down dramatically. And if you account for body composition, relative to men have more lean mass versus women have more fat mass, the differences almost get wiped away. So in sports where you have weight classes, it's very interesting to see I think you sort of level the playing field at least a little bit, but the differences,
because you're class by size.
Yeah, but the differences in the upper body still do exist. But if you look at more trained athletes, you know, if you look at something like aerobic capacity, there's a difference, again, 20 to 25% between males and females. But if you looked at trained distance runners, that goes down. And the difference is only like 8 to 10%. So, you know, one of the things that I want to make clear as people are listening is that we do have some differences. But it's, you know, having a girl on a boys' team is not like having a, you know, an anchor. I mean, they're quite competitive. And Alyssa, I'm sure, can speak to that. The differences that we see in the average population are pretty great, but in the trained population, they do go down. So I think that it's not as much of a weakness. I don't think of it as a weakness.
No, it's interesting what you said. Having a girl on the team isn't an anchor. Is that the attitude, Alyssa, that you sometimes face, that having a girl on the team was an anchor? In other words, dragging the team down?
I never saw myself as dragging the team down. There's definitely boys that I think were less skilled and even doing some of the conditioning drills, like I was faster than some of the guys, and my coach really pushed me, kind of letting me know, like, hey, these are the boys' standards. So, like, you know, if you're coming in a little bit behind that, that's okay. Like, don't worry about that. Like, this is your standard. This is the boys' standard. So, like, we had mile times that we had to be under, and we had, we called them winnesquams. They were like a sprinting drill that was super, super fun. You know, I did what I had to do to kind of get there. And, you know, sometimes I'd pair up with one of the guys and, like, they'd really push me and help me finish those, some of those exercises and stuff that they're just awful.
Well, and taking off your hat as a former high school athlete and putting on now your current hat, women's softball head coach and women's soccer assistant coach at Dean College in Franklin, Mass. And as you guys have alluded to, some people see having a girl on the team as an anchor. And I'm guessing, Alyssa, but I want to know what you think, some people see having a boy on a girl's team as an unfair advantage. In Massachusetts, where you work, for example, boys can play field hockey. In most states, that's allotted just for girls.
So we actually had, going back to my high school a little bit, we had an exchange student that wanted to come in and play field hockey.
A male exchange student.
A male exchange student. And I guess in New Hampshire you have to like move up. Back then it was classes. I think they're different now. Divisions, I think. So you had to move up a class if you had a male on your team. But I don't think that one person really makes a difference in a team sport like that. So, I mean, if it could be the worst team ever, and you put one guy on it, it's not all of a sudden going to be a state championship team. So
sure.
I think that, you know, these team sports that, you know, if there's one guy on the team, that's fine. It's not like you have to drop down a class or division if you have one girl on your team.
But if you have five guys on the team, you know, things start to change. This has been, again, the big takeaway for me has been it depends. It depends on the community. It depends on the individual athlete. It depends on the sport. It depends on the team. Matt, I'd love your thoughts on that, too. We've been talking more about if a girl joins, you know, a traditional boys team. But what about when a boy plays on a sport that's typically allotted to girls? What do you think about that, just as someone who works in youth sports? Tough question to answer.
Yeah.
We'll set that aside, maybe. I tell you what, we're heading into a break, so I'll give you a chance to think about that over the break, and maybe I'll throw it to Ryan, too, and definitely throw it to our listeners. We'd love to hear your stories, your questions and comments. We're talking about co-ed youth sports, what the status is in our schools and in our communities, rec department leagues, private leagues, and so forth. In some circumstances, does playing together benefit kids and teens? And in some instances, is it not in the kids' best interest? That's what we're looking at today in The Exchange. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
Thank you. Support NHPR today and get entered to win a trip to Nashville, Tennessee. Catch a show at the legendary Grand Ole Opry, stroll along the Music City Wall of Fame, or see where Dolly Parton, Johnny Cash, and Elvis Presley made music history. Give as an NHPR sustainer, and you're entered into all our drawings, including a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Australia or New Zealand. Don't wait. Become an NHPR sustainer today at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, co-ed sports in our local schools and our communities. What's the policy where you live? When do you think co-ed sports are helpful? And when are they not in the player's best interest? Send us an email. We'd love to hear your stories. exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests in studio. Matt Farisi is with us, wrestling coach at Keene High School. Also, Alyssa Krause. She's women's softball head coach and women's soccer assistant coach at Dean College. Also, a former athlete on a boys' varsity soccer team at Winnesquam Regional High School in Tilton. And also with us is Ryan Carmichael, assistant professor of exercise and sport physiology at Plymouth State University. Again, you can join us. Email exchange@nhpr.org or phone call 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, before we go to our listeners, just before the break, we were talking about something that Ryan and Alyssa brought up, that, you know, some people see girls as a quote-unquote anchor on the team, dragging it down a little bit. But then, Ryan, I asked the question, do some people see having a boy or boys on the team as an unfair advantage and something that, you know, they don't want to see on a girls' team because that doesn't feel fair to the team that has all girls? I just wonder what you think.
Yeah, I think, you know, my answer is going to frustrate you, I'm sure. But I'm thinking about Alyssa's experience. And, you know, really, people think that all men are stronger than all women. And so if you look at your soccer team in high school, I think a lot of people would say that she was probably the weakest on the team, or the one that was the least cardiovascularly fit. And that's absolutely not true. I mean, it may have happened to be true that she could fall in that category, but it's much more likely that she was somewhere in the middle. She also could have been on top. She could have been the strongest and the most aerobically fit. So we look at these averages across the population, and we see these truths about males and females, but once you're talking about having one male on a female team or a couple of females on a male team, you know, I really just don't think that it's going to affect the game that much. Plus, in team sports, you have the added piece of the rest of the people on the team and how well they are all doing. And then you have the element of skill, which has nothing to do with the sex differences. So I don't necessarily think it would be a huge advantage to have a male on a women's high school soccer team at all. I mean, I absolutely don't think that
person could fall. What if there were five males, though? I mean, then it starts to add up.
Well, I mean, I think it might be important to you know, I mean, when you look at, let's say, like, distance races or relay races or something like that, if you're on a mixed team, they want that mix to be, let's say, 50% males and females. You can't just have one female and the rest male. So, I mean, I can see the need or the desire to have the team actually be mixed versus, you know, having a predominantly male team go up against a predominantly female team. I guess I could see there being some disadvantages there.
Alyssa, what do you think?
I think it also depends. You know, we've been talking about sport-specific, like ice hockey, for example. If it's a women's ice hockey team, having five males on that team, all of a sudden it kind of becomes a men's hockey team. And also, like, the rule changes between, you know, women's lacrosse, men's lacrosse, men's ice hockey, women's ice hockey, and, you know, kind of the physicalness that's allowed during the men's games, that is kind of, you have your bubble in women's lacrosse, and, like, you can't come in the bubble.
Oh, wow. What is the bubble?
I'm not really sure. I'm not a lacrosse coach, but I just hear that you can't, like, hit them. Or I don't know.
You can't have your stick in their kind of shoulder head area.
I see.
It's bubble. Very different. Yeah, it's a bubble.
Yeah,
it's
I don't know much about lacrosse. So, but in the men's game, you can whack people within that bubble?
Well, you can check them.
Yeah, you can check in men's hockey. lacrosse and and both, hockey.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to our listeners. Lots of questions from people about this, and we'd love to hear your stories and experiences. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, let's go to Hollis first, where Bernie is on the line. Hi, Bernie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. How you all doing?
Good. Go ahead, Bernie.
Hi. Thanks for actually talking about this. I think it's a fascinating subject. And I actually coached wrestling at the Hollis Brookline Middle School for 2 years. And each year we had a handful of girls who did quite well. In fact, my daughter wrestles as well. And one of the things that I've seen is that, you know, something like wrestling, you know, you've mentioned before about the weight classes where it can level the playing field. And I think in wrestling, it's certainly true in other sports like that. I mean, I've been doing grappling and wrestling for 20 years, and I just simply cannot beat my instructors, even though I'm stronger than them and bigger than them. Their technique is just, you know, so much more advanced than mine. So this is interesting to see how, you know, wrestling has been developing with girls coming into it. And those stats that the Keene coach mentioned are quite telling, because a lot of the boys seem to be dropping where the girls are, you know, incoming into the wrestling programs. And I've heard some coaches at the high school level and even college say that, you know, girls in fluctuating into wrestling might be helping to boost and even potentially save the sport.
Interesting. So participation in the sport, Bernie, has been dropping among boys. So more girls are coming in, and that's helping out. But it seemed, you seem to say that boys and girls wrestle differently. I'd love to hear a little bit more from you on that.
Not so much. Well, not so much differently, but I think it's, you know, a lot of technique based, and technique is very important. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I have to laugh all the time I go against, you know, somebody who's a better wrestler, like our high school, you know, wrestling coach at Hollis would kill me on the wrestling mat just because his technique is, you know, phenomenal. I'm, you know, I weigh more than him. I'm bigger than him, but it just wouldn't matter.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
His technique. And one of the things I'd like to point out, I think that as girls are given the opportunity to try more sports at a younger age and see where they'd like to go, they actually can start to develop these skills earlier. Just as a side note, I've, you know, been watching CrossFit competitive sports on TV, and this past year, two women nearly beat one of the men in one of the events. I believe it was a 1500, 1.5 mile sprint followed by a swim, then another sprint. And, you know, if you look at these women who have been competing in this stuff for a while, they're very impressive. You know, I wouldn't want to go against them.
Wow. Well, thank you for the call. And a couple points, picking up on what Ryan has talked about endurance sports and some women there. But your specialty, Matt, wrestling, what do you think about some of the comments that Bernie makes that there's been a decline in boys' participation, but the girls are getting more involved in wrestling? I wonder, have you seen that in Keene?
So in Keene specifically, our program has been gaining numbers every year for the last 6 or 7 years. We probably expect to have 50 wrestlers this upcoming season, which is up from zero about 8 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
but, you know, when wrestling made a move to get away from weight cutting, they put in a weight certification process that tests every wrestler for body fat composition prior to the season, and then provides them a minimum weight that they can wrestle at. For boys, the minimum body fat is 7%, and for girls, it's 12%.
Just recognizing the difference.
Just recognize the difference. So, in general, that difference can be overcome. There are a lot of boys who are walking around with a much higher composition, but as you get to the top tier wrestlers, that 5% difference in muscle mass is noticeable. And you can drop below 7% under certain conditions. So the NCAA allows you to be at 3%, and you can go below that. So the difference between somebody who's at 3% body fat versus somebody who's been capped at 12% or been limited to 12%, that's noticeable when everybody is at a certain level. That makes a big difference.
Well, Bernie,
that's when it really you start to see the difference.
Bernie, thank you for the call. And let's take another one. This is Cameron in Orford. Hi, Cameron. Thanks for joining us today. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for letting me come on.
Sure.
So I just wanted to weigh in. So I come from a small, very small high school, about 200 kids. And my sister has been playing sports since she was about five. And growing up with two older brothers, she learned to be very tough and dish back what we dish back to her. So she's definitely very fending for herself. And one of the things I sort of watched as she grew up is that she was a lot more athletically and just physically stronger and faster than a lot of the girls she played with. And I always thought that if she had been allowed to play on some of the boys' soccer teams, the boys' basketball team, it would have been much more of a challenge for her. And I think that would have been better for her.
But she wasn't allowed, Cameron, to play on boys' teams?
No. Yeah, no, she wasn't allowed to.
Yeah. So how is she doing today? Is she still involved in sports or has she kind of moved on or?
No, she's a sophomore in high school, and she is the only sophomore to have joined our varsity teams in the past, I think, 6 or 7 years, just because the coaches have realized her skill is that good. But whenever I go home and watch her for games, it's always tough because I know that she could be doing way better or could be giving herself more of a challenge if she was allowed to play with the guys.
Wow, real interesting. And Alyssa, what do you think about this story? Thank you, Cameron, for calling in.
I grew up with two brothers as well, so I can very much relate. But yeah, I mean, I go back and forth on it. Like if I had the opportunity to play, you know, girls soccer in high school, I think that, you know, I might have been more successful. You know, I might have played different positions. I might have, you know, just because I had to play with the guys, I think that made me more physical. But, you know, growing up on like our rec teams and stuff, those were all co-ed. So I think that the physicalness started there. But, you know, it's also kind of I owe that to my coach because she was the one that pushed me through all those drills. And she actually went on to coach a female program after that was very successful. So part of me was kind of hoping that I'd do that and maybe have a little bit better foot skill, and that could have, you know, made me a better athlete in college. But I can see benefits from both ways, but yeah. I'm happy with my experiences.
Well, and it's a tricky judgment call, isn't it, for a coach, Ryan? I mean, let's say that, you know, athlete Susie is, as Cameron says, yeah, maybe she would do better on a boys' team, but maybe athlete, you know, Joan is... It's unclear, and then you get parents sort of saying, yeah, my daughter too, and, you know, it's kind of tricky once you open up the door.
Yeah, but I think Alyssa has a great point, though, because if you look at something like soccer or lacrosse or field hockey, I suppose, or ice hockey, the difference in play is significant between males and men and women's teams. This is a generalization. I think Alyssa could speak better to this point, but it may be that the men's teams are more aggressive and physical, so you learn that style of play, which can be beneficial, but less technical. So you kind of lose that. So I think playing on a men's team or a boys' team isn't necessarily going to be an advantage. I had folks like that I went to high school with too, just girls that were just so awesome, and they dominated, and they would have dominated on the boys teams too, but it really is a different sport. Soccer's sort of similar, but lacrosse is far different between males and females. Ice hockey is far different. Basketball maybe has some similarities, so there's very few sports where you have a real direct crossover. So the style of play I think is so different. But again, I think Alyssa would be able to speak to that point better.
Well, what are the philosophies behind that style of play? Like the bubble that Alyssa talked about, mm-hmm. with lacrosse, and some of the differences that you guys have talked about, that soccer is a more, you're allowed to, what did you say, Alyssa, sort of hit people more in boys soccer?
No, that was lacrosse.
Lacrosse, okay. Yeah. Checking people.
Soccer, I think so. Physicalness, I mean, I've played with, you know, girls college and it gets aggressive. But I think that, you know, it's kind of, it also has to do with like size. Like I think my freshman year of high school, I have a picture of like little 5 foot me going up against this like 6 foot, 250 pound kid. And I was just like, this just isn't fair.
So,
but, you know, I'm bodying him. I'm trying.
Yeah, doing your best, I'm sure. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Cameron, thanks for that call. And Valerie's calling in from Summersworth. Hi, Valerie. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Go ahead, Valerie.
Okay, great. So I am a PhD student in women, gender, and sexuality studies. And my interest is in gender and sports. So I was wondering if your guest could talk a little bit more about co-ed sports as a space potentially for transgender kids and people who are gender non-binary or gender non-conforming as well. It seems to me like it could be a good space that could be more accepting with less, you know, potential scrutiny, as we have seen. But I would love to hear their thoughts on it.
So go ahead, just make sure that we're clear, Valerie. You're wondering about this whole girls' sports, boys' sports, when it comes to kids who identify with the opposite gender?
Yes.
They were?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And I'm sure this is something that is being discussed right now in youth sports, both at the college and high school level. So, Valerie, thank you. And I wonder, Ryan, what you think about this. Is this coming up a lot in terms of the research that you're looking at and so forth?
Not the research that I'm looking at. I knew we were going to be asked that question. And I have to be honest, I think Valerie might be able to answer that better than I can, certainly. But maybe Matt and Alyssa would be able to add something. Unfortunately, I'm not as familiar with the physiological changes. So I just don't know the answer to that. But I do know that it is something that is being studied at the professional level. And, you know, we see cases in I think, the Olympics, et cetera. But again, I'm really not that familiar with it. Valerie talked about, like, you know, acceptance issues and things like that. Those are kind of cultural phenomena. And I imagine it would be really wonderful experience to have co-ed teams. But I just am not as familiar as I'd like to be.
Sure. Well, and it's an area that's emerging. And Angie also sent us an email asking the same question. I'm curious as to if any of these coaches have a plan in place regarding the growing number of non-binary or transgendered individuals. Angie says, I think when we're talking about gendered sports, this is a critical question. So, Angie, thank you. And anybody else want to jump in on that or not at this point? It's something that is probably coming forward and that you're having to look at, and we'll probably discuss in a later show. So I really appreciate the call, Valerie. Let's go to Peter. He's calling in from Grantham. Hi, Peter. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I'm a retired school teacher from New Jersey. I coached Clifton High School, which was the largest school in New Jersey at the time, the largest high school. And I had the experience of coaching two women on my men's team before they had a women's team and before Title IX occurred. Then Title IX came in, meant equality for women's sports, and they had to offer, if there was an interest, a women's tennis team as well as a men's. The women played in the fall, the men played in the spring. These two women also could play women's and men's tennis in the same school year, until they eliminated that the following year. Just as an example, one of the girls played third singles. We had a format of three singles and two doubles teams for each match. We won six straight Passaic counties. This girl played first doubles. She went on to coach the same women's and men's team that I coached after I left, and she's in the Hall of Fame in the Clifton High School. I believe she went on to play college too. My point is that in tennis, back then you didn't have these Western grips with the heavy topspin, but
so and I'm going to interrupt you, Peter, because it's getting a little detailed in terms of tennis. But I'd love to put you on hold because I want to ask you about your experience once Title IX passed and how that might have changed things for you, because we should talk a little bit about Title IX. That's a big piece of this conversation. So hold on, Peter, if you could, please, and we'll be right back. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, the pull of New Hampshire's 4,000 footers. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. This hour, how local schools, community teams, private leagues view co-ed sports these days. And as we're hearing, there are a lot of exceptions to the general rules. What's your opinion? When does it help all players to have boys and girls on the same team? And when doesn't it help? Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And just before the break, we were talking to Peter in Grantham, who said he used to coach tennis, had two girls on his male tennis team until Title IX passed, and then there was a separate girls team. And Peter, I did want to ask you a quick question, if I could, and that is, what are your thoughts now on this idea of single-sex teams versus co-ed teams, given your own pretty interesting experience there?
Well, the men's team and the women's team both did the same drills, the same exercises, everything the same. I ran exactly the same, no different. The same length of running, the same stamina drills, the same hitting drills. In tennis, I believe, personally, in the high school age, they can compete against one another. And in our league, which was the NNJIL, which was one of the stronger leagues in northern New Jersey, it was even proposed that they combine the two teams and have a mixed doubles as one of the points for the match.
So mixed doubles, yeah.
A male and a woman playing against a male and a woman.
Right, and that reminds me of the movie that's gotten a lot of play, The Battle of the Century, I think it's called.
Yeah, Battle of the Century.
Yeah, okay, so you would know about that, yeah.
Yes, yep.
Well, Peter, thank you. Oh, go ahead, yeah.
I didn't see any difference in the stamina at all.
Okay.
Nothing at all. Nothing in the production of the strokes, the serve, maybe the men were slightly had an edge in the upper levels. But as soon as you got down into the middle of the team, there's no difference at all.
Well, it kind of gets to what Ryan has been talking about, the stamina issue and so forth. Peter, thank you for calling in about tennis, because that is something where people talk about men and women and that whole, you know, competition against each other, although in general, this seems to be more segregated. Good to hear from you, Peter. Lots of emails coming in, too. David in Portsmouth says, sex-segregated teams are likely unconstitutional. Schools and communities should switch to merit-based teams rather than sex-segregated. If a girl can play as well as a boy, why can't she be on the team? And, well, David, as we're hearing, in some instances, she can. But unconstitutional, I don't think so, Ryan. Title IX doesn't say you can't have single-sex teams. It just says you have to have equal opportunity.
Yeah, it really speaks to participation. One of the things that I think of when I hear that is I don't, as a former athlete and someone that competes in endurance sports right now, at the kind of masters at level, I have no interest in being on the men's team or competing with men. I am very happy to compete with women. The women that I compete with are fit and fierce and strong, and I don't consider myself like the weaker sex or anything like that. It's just different. So at the high school level, having a merit-based team where if you're good enough, you can be on the team. I don't know. I mean, I think there's good reasons to have girls and boys teams and men's teams and women's teams. They play differently. I don't necessarily think that, the men's teams are better or better to watch or anything like that.
It's just different.
Yeah, absolutely.
I appreciate that point. Yeah, what do you think, Alyssa? How do single-sex sports benefit young athletes? We've heard from some people who've said, it's too bad my sister couldn't play on the boys' team because it was, a more advanced level of play, but maybe not. Maybe it's just different and some athletes would really prefer to play with people of their own gender.
I think that, there are benefits from playing co-ed sports, and there's also benefits playing single-sex sports. For me, example, making me so physical at a young age, playing with the guys, like that made me physical playing with the girls later on. Some of the kids that I coach, and I'm always like, hey, like mark up on, so-and-so. And when they're trying to play defense and they're marking up on that person, they're like 2 feet away.
Wait, what does marking up mean?
Playing defense.
Okay.
So, you know, they're 2 feet away from the person, not really kind of playing defense. Whereas, you know, when I grew up and I learned how to play defense, it was, you know, you are right on that person. Like, there is no space between you guys. You are, you know, elbow right into their gut, like kind of, you know, as physical as can be, because if they can just walk right by you, you're not doing your job of playing defense. Whereas if you're pushing them and kind of getting all up in their space, they can't get by you as easy. So, you know, I always kind of try and coach my girls a little bit and be like, hey, like, play more physical, like, you know, get on them, body them off the ball. And they kind of all look at me like I'm crazy. And I'm like, I promise it will work. Like,
will they get, I mean, are there specific rules in girls soccer that say you can't do that? Like, will they get a foul if they play like a boy?
No. I mean, okay. the rule, I mean, it's really up to the referee's discretion on what a foul is and what a foul isn't. Sometimes the refs can be kind of soft. Sorry. Kind of, it's sometimes a girl will fall and the referee will be like, oh my gosh, that was a foul. And it's like, nobody even touched her. Like, she's fine. And whereas sometimes in a guy's game, somebody will fall and they're all going to not say anything. But I, you know, I really try to encourage my girls to play more physical. It's part of the game. If you watch any professionals, like, you'll see that they're not given that, the offensive player, like, any space. They're right on that person.
Matt, what do you think about this question? You know, when is it beneficial to young athletes to be on a single-sex team?
Well, one of the things I thought was interesting is I was looking at the 45 collegiate programs that offer women's wrestling, and the majority of the athletes were from the six states that had state-sanctioned high school girls' programs.
Yeah, and again, you told us earlier, sorry to interrupt, that New Hampshire is not one of them.
New Hampshire's not one of them. Okay. So it's California, yeah. Washington, Hawaii, Alaska, Texas, and something else. And so when you look at the rosters, that's where the athletes are coming from. And so, I mean, without any real evidence into this, but it appears that by providing that opportunity, that was the that was leading to this interest and. And growing popularity of athletes who wanted to continue wrestling after high school.
So by providing the opportunity for girls wrestling, it encouraged more girls to go into wrestling than some of them might have hesitated to go on a co-ed team? Is that what you're saying, Matt?
I mean, that's if I had to speculate based on a glance at one snapshot of data.
Sure.
But that certainly appears to be the case.
Alyssa, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I can speak from a coaching perspective here for a college sport. Is, you know, based off recruiting and stuff. If there's only 45 schools that have women's wrestling programs, those schools are most likely just going to those six states that have those women's programs. They're not going to go to New Hampshire to recruit and go watch a boys meet to maybe see one girl wrestle.
Gotcha.
Which is kind of how I felt when I was in high school. Like, no one came to recruit me to play soccer in college because, you know, I'm playing on a boys team. Why is someone going to come all the way up to New Hampshire at my game to watch, you know, 26 boys play and one girl?
That's a really interesting point, and I had not thought about that. Okay, let's go back to our callers. And Ed is in Campton. Hi, Ed. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Fine.
Yeah. I'm proud to inform you folks that, the newfound football team, there's a girl on their varsity team. She's been there for quite some time. She loves football. And they've solved any problems of girl versus boy and all that. She's been playing for quite some time.
Wow. What position does she play at? Do you know?
I wish I knew.
Yeah, that's okay. You're a fan, I can tell. No issues have come up in Newfound around having a girl on the football team?
Apparently not, no. And her family and everybody else is just very proud of her, and she just loves it. She's happy as all get out.
All right. Ed, thanks for calling. And, you know, we started out talking, Ryan. I was surprised to learn that there are 1,500 girls playing football around the country, even though that's often one of the very first sports that people mention when they say, look, boys and girls should not play together. And the size and weight and strength differences do matter. So,
Yeah, I suppose they do. I would be interested in, you know, the positions they're in. But, you know, one of the things that I'm thinking about as we're talking is, you know, when I think about football, I'm thinking about the NFL. Those guys are huge. You know, that's not what our high school players look like. I mean, the difference.
Although some of them are pretty big, too.
That's true. That's true. you're right. But, you know, the differences that we see at you know, in the non-professional level of sport between men and women are far different than what we see at the collegiate level and the professional level. So I can absolutely see. You know, you Carl mentioned the tennis game, men or boys competing against women. I mean, I think at that level, it's bound to be absolutely fine.
Well, it's a point worth making that, you know, we're not talking about the NFL where people are really, really big and that might be a difference. Ed, thank you so much for letting us know about that. And an email came in from UC in Durham. Who says, why not consider athletic sports where having men and women on the same team is a feature, quote, not a bug. The sport of ultimate frisbee has a co-ed division where teams of seven people must have at least three players of each gender. Sometimes teams choose to play a person-on-person defense. Other times teams choose zone or other defenses that draw on the relative strengths of each player. UC says, ultimate combines the nonstop movement and athletic endurance of soccer with the aerial passing skills of football. It is played by over 3.5 million people in the U.S. and has a thriving global community. After college, couples and families can continue to compete together on the same team. So, and UC, I appreciate the shout out for Ultimate Frisbee because my older son just joined the Ultimate Frisbee team at his school. So I appreciate the email. Thank you. Any comments or thoughts there on that? On that one, Alyssa, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point to make is I've played some co-ed soccer post-college, just, you know, kind of rec stuff that sometimes it's you have to have two girls on the field at a time. And I recently played down in Boston, I think it was like 2 weeks ago, and my team had more girls on the field, kind of we had an abundance of girls there. So we put out more girls on the team than we kind of needed to. And, you know, we ended up winning. It didn't hinder us at all.
Well, here's another email that came in from Rebecca in Bow. She says, I've played both field hockey and lacrosse and currently coach varsity field hockey. I would love to see boys play field hockey. It was originally a men's sport. And we are in the minority of countries that do not have boys' teams. We discussed gender identity at our New Hampshire Field Hockey Coaches meeting and were advised that players who identify as female are eligible to play at the high school level. So, Rebecca, thank you for that. That's really interesting. And a couple listeners did bring that up earlier. Was it you, I think, Ryan, who mentioned that in most countries, field hockey is not necessarily considered a women's sport?
I don't think I mentioned that, but
was that you, Alyssa? Yeah.
We had a foreign exchange student who came to play.
That's
he came from Ireland.
So, yeah. And often I think field hockey is sort of provided because there isn't girls' football at a school, so they'll provide women's field hockey to sort of counterbalance that. But as I said earlier, in Massachusetts, boys can actually play on the field hockey team. So thank you for that email. You know, just to wrap up with all of you, you all work with young people, you all have experience yourself. Maybe to you first, Alyssa, but I want to hear from everybody. As you work with young athletes, what do they tell you that they want in terms of a single-sex team or a co-ed team?
I think most of the kids that I work with didn't know that it's kind of an option. Occasionally, I'll let them know that I played on a boys' soccer team, but sometimes it just doesn't come up. But they think it's a norm for them, and, you know, that wasn't an opportunity that I had. So it's kind of I don't think they realize how many kids don't have the opportunity to play on an all-girls team sometimes.
Yeah, because if you come from a small town, but if you come from a city like Concord or Boston or wherever, then sure, you've got the girls' teams and the boys' teams and so forth. So do they seem pretty content with the way things are? You know, girls playing softball, boys playing baseball, girls soccer, boys soccer, and so forth?
Yeah, I think so. The other day, one of my pitchers, she asked to borrow a bucket of balls, and I said, yeah, sure. And she goes, oh, so-and-so on the baseball team wants to try to hit off me. And I was like, as long as you don't get hurt. Like, but, you know, I asked how it went later, and she was like, oh, good. Like, you know, he didn't hit anything. So it's, I think, you know, they're different sports.
Matt, what do you think? What do you hear from the young people you work with about what they prefer?
So I know that the girls who have been on our team would prefer that they had girls to compete against who were geographically closer. They're really great to have on the team. I think they're really happy to be, really enjoy being on the part of the program. But I know that they're traveling to 90 minutes twice a week to to train with other girls.
And so they'd like to have a girls' team.
I imagine they would, yes. And so I know that some days they would come to practice at the high school and then would drive 90 minutes to wrestle again with a girls' program. So, I mean, they definitely would prefer or have the option to do both.
Wow, that's interesting. So are there any single-sex wrestling teams, girls' teams in New Hampshire? Or are all the teams combined like yours?
They're all combined.
Yeah.
Massachusetts has made an effort to get a girls' programs off the ground. But New Hampshire is a little smaller. And so especially with some of the smaller schools, I think it's tough to field.
Well, and you hear that from a lot of small towns. It's hard. You can't have a basketball team unless you make it co-ed or whatever. Or in your instance, Alyssa, a soccer team when you were in high school. What do you think, Ryan? Probably can't make a blanket statement, but I wonder what you hear from the young people that you work with about what they prefer.
Well, I don't just work with younger people. I work with a lot of older people. And I think that they're fine, competing on same-sex sports. I think one of the things that we have to realize, we had Title IX. We think that there's gender equity in sports, but there's still a lot of differences in males and female sports that needs to be equalized. You know, women are racing for shorter distances and things like that. That's unacceptable, I think, to a lot of our female athletes. So that's sort of where they would like to see some changes, but I think they're pretty happy competing with the women. There's plenty of competition.
And again, there are all the exceptions that we talked about, from Alyssa's story to the girl playing football in the Lakes region and so forth. This has been really interesting, guys. I really appreciate you coming in. Matt, thank you for making the trip from Keene. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Matt Farisi, wrestling coach at Keene High School. Alyssa, great to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Nice meeting you.
That's Alyssa Krause. Again, she is a coach at Dean College in Franklin, Mass., and a former athlete on a boys' varsity soccer team when she was at Winnesquam Regional High School. Ryan, thank you for helping us out. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.